Don't have anyone talking to us today, and I think we'll appreciate that. True? All right. I'm going to call for the approval of the agenda. Somebody please make a motion.
So moved.
A second?
Second.
All right. All those approved, please indicate on our devices. All right, looks like we're all done. We all have approved the agenda. So we're going to move forward now with our staff reports and requested items. First item we will have here is I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Finger for an introduction of the agenda items.
Good afternoon, Chair Pollard. I will point out that there was an opportunity on the agenda for comments by you or the board if you would like them. If not, it's staff report. Let me have them while we're talking. Welcome to the first meeting of the Baseball Stadium Community Oversights Committee. Appreciative that you're all here. Today's agenda has two staff reports for you, as you just mentioned, and I'll start with agenda item one, which is a staff report on the, I'm going to call it BSCOC just for efficiency of words, and why we're here, what we're doing, what the future looks like together. The intent of this agenda item is to provide an overview of the Stadium Authority, of the Community Benefits Agreement, of this committee, and of the role of the director and what we're all going to do here together. Point out, if you haven't seen it yet, that we have a Baseball Stadium Community Oversight Committee website. It can be found on the Stadium Authority's website. In the upper right-hand corner, there's an MLB Stadium link, and if you click that, you can find the Community Benefits page. Number of things here, including all of your names, in meeting information, if you were to click on that, you'd be able to find agendas and the like. And then right in the middle is the Community Benefits Agreement itself, if you ever need to find it or reference it and don't know where it's at. So let's start with the Stadium Authority. The Stadium Authority was established in 2016 through special act of the state legislature to oversee the efforts related to the relocation of the Raiders NFL football franchise and the construction of what ultimately was Allegiant Stadium. 2023, the responsibilities of the Stadium Authority were modified. They were expanded to oversee the relocation of the A's Major League Baseball franchise and the construction of that stadium. There are four key agreements that happened in each of those, and Caroline and I spent most of our last 2 years negotiating, trying to manage the intent of the lawmakers and the governor and all the folks and the team involved in this. Those were the lease, the development agreement, the non-relocation agreement, and the community benefits agreement. Respectively, those cover the use of the facility by the sports franchise, the construction and financing of the stadium along the way, the requirement for the team to stay in town for 30 years, and if not, to repay proportionally the public contribution if they were to leave early. And these are very generic descriptions, very high level. And then the community benefits agreement, which we'll talk about. There are 13 members on the Stadium Authority, and there are no employees of the Stadium Authority. Caroline and I are the Chief Strategy Officer and the General Counsel of the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, respectively. By contract, we do the work of the Stadium Authority along with our peers. We charge the Stadium Authority. They pay us on an hourly rate. And Clark County provides financial, bookkeeping, and other services, and also are paid through an interlocal agreement. So let's talk about, that's where the Stadium Authority is. Let's talk about the Community Benefits Agreement. Community Benefits Agreement has three parties to it: the Stadium Authority itself, the Stadium Events Company, and the Team Company. So inside of the organizational structure of what you think of as the soon-to-be Las Vegas A's, there is a Stadium Events Company responsible for the relationship and the lease and the management and upkeep of the stadium. They are one and the same as the development partner who is responsible for the construction contract and the, you know, oversight of that activity, same entity. And then there's the team company that's effectively the team holding company. And the purpose is to ensure civic and economic benefit from the stadium, an exchange transaction for the public contribution into the stadium. The term of this agreement doesn't actually kick in until the date of the bond issuance. date of the bond issuance is what starts the up to $380 million of public contribution in the stadium. The A's have control over the timing of this financing, and the bond deal won't happen for a little bit. I don't want to speak for the timing of it. The A's have spoke to it, but it'll happen. Whether it happens in 6 months or a year or a little bit after, it'll happen during the construction window. But there's a practical enforcement here because the community benefits agreement includes, and they need to structure a construction workforce in a way right now to meet the state law. They're going to get to the point where there will be public contribution, so they need to be in the right place with the construction workforce and their adherence to that. So we have a practical enforcement that we're going to administer now in agreement with the A's that precedes the technical requirement that this agreement starts when the bonds are issued. And so sort of three tiers to this community benefits agreement. There are workforce requirements. There are both construction workforce and operational workforce requirements, and then there's some community engagement requirements. We are going to talk a little bit about the community engagement requirements here, but those happen later on, and we will deeper dive into those later on. Right now, there are construction workforce requirements. And at a high level, those are that 51% of the hours on the project be performed by target workers, defined as women, minorities, veterans, and disabled folks. That a living wage be provided to all workers on the project, and that a minimum of 15% of all contracts be to small and local businesses. Same provision as was in the Allegiant Stadium law. When we get over to the operations side, when they're running the stadium, there will be a requirement that 60% of the hours for event operations be provided by those same defined target workers, that a living wage and benefits be provided to the team company employees, and that an employee relief fund be provided for those same team employees. And then that third tier of what's in the community benefits agreement, the community engagement initiatives, and these aren't in order of importance necessarily, again, akin to Allegiant Stadium, a suite in the facility needs to be provided for use by the public, and those are for civic, charitable, or economic development opportunities. They're not to be used by, you know, fat cat elected officials or other folks. They're not for that type of use. They're intended to be used for those defined purposes in the law. The team is required to provide mentorship and educational programs, to provide a structured community giving program, and we'll talk a little bit more about that either in the next slide, actually in the next slide. There are some financial attributes put to this, some financial requirements, and those are that in the first year that the county issues bonds and until the ballpark opens, that the team put at least $500,000 per year towards these initiatives. And then afterwards, the greater of the math of $2 million, that's the minimum threshold, or 1% of team ticket sales. The team is required to make reasonable commercial efforts because this community benefits agreement, and I told you we'll deeper dive into it later, it has a lot of things in it. It has a lot of potential community partners that could receive benefits here. And so when you think it's a menu, it's a very, very long menu of things. And in any given year, the A's have complete control over how they apply these financial assets towards that. But across time, they've made a contractual commitment that they'll make this reasonable commercial effort to hit all of the specified benefits. And I trust all of you will stop me anytime you want to ask me a question. The A's are required in that community benefits agreement to provide quarterly reports to the authority and to you. And then courtesy copies are given to the governor, the Legislative Council Bureau, and to Clark County. And then a more substantive annual report talking about the accountability and the adherence to the community benefits agreement. We have the right to audit. Now, I'll talk a little bit about Don and the director here, and I probably actually should have stopped a little bit more formally. You guys have kind of all met us, but I'm Ed Finger. I'm the stadium administrator, Caroline's counsel. Don Burnett is the community benefits director appointed by the stadium authority. Everybody's met everybody, but there's three people in the audience or that might not know that, or one in the audience that might not know that. So Don's role is a monitoring role. We'll talk about that in a second. But we have the authority to go deeper than that, to really get into the books and do an audit and to have a third party do that for us and to make sure that the reporting of the A's financial investment in these bears out in accounts. We're allowed to do that once a year. We're allowed to do it more often if there's a reason to do so, a cause. We pay for that audit unless the audit shows us that the A's accounting of it was more than 5% wrong, in which case they pay for it. Those audit reports are required under the law to be publicly reported under the CBA. The CBA must be reviewed and updated no less frequently than every 5 years, but there are terms of it that can't be changed. So 5 years from now, those of us that are still here that renegotiate this as required by the law can't, for example, change the financial requirement under it. Switch from the CBA to talking about you, the committee. Also created by this 2023 special act, you are a public body under state law, which means we adhere to public open meeting law, which means you adhere to state ethics requirements and other things that council has briefed you on. I'll go ahead and read this. Your job is to oversee Stadco and TEBCO's compliance with the terms and conditions of this CBA, and you'll provide monitoring, oversight, and accountability in connection with the performance of the CBA. You shall receive and review reports from Stadco, TEBCO, and your community benefits director regarding Stadco and TEBCO's compliance with the CBA and Stadco and TEBCO's commercially reasonable efforts to implement the programs contemplated in the CBA. You shall report to the authority, the board, Caroline and I, that your findings as to whether Stadco and TEBCO are implementing the programs contemplated by the CBA and are otherwise in compliance. So good or bad, your job is to tell the board how you're doing. Every time we have one of these meetings, which will generally precede, these will be quarterly meetings, they'll generally precede the quarterly Stadium Authority meetings, there will be a report out on what this committee did and what happened at this committee meeting to the board in that meeting. So you review reports, you track workforce and economic data, you hold public meetings for transparency, you determine events of non-compliance. If they ever happen, you notify the board in such case, and the board under the law and under the CBA have that responsibility for actually initiating legal proceedings, which is the ultimate enforcement mechanism contemplated in the law and the CBA if there is non-compliance. Mr. Burnett, the director, and he'll have a more significant role in these meetings going forward, and the person who's going to do the day-to-day work to monitor, and day-to-day isn't quite that literal, it's not an everyday job, but he's the person on the ground monitoring the team's compliance with the community benefits agreement. He advises you, and he works with you to facilitate, if necessary, compliance with the agreement, again, ultimately reporting back to the Stadium Authority Board on how that's going. So as we go forward, and Dr. Pollard, congratulations. I think everybody in the room knows, but to the extent everybody in the room doesn't know, you've got a fantastic opportunity in Washington, D.C. to lead a national college group, and we're proud of you and excited for you and miss you. Don't regret for a second that we chose you for the directorship. Opportunities like this don't happen that often, and I'm grateful that you ran the meeting today because you're going to leave, and you won't be here for the next meeting. But with that said, going forward, what we're going to do is we're going to have this cadence of quarterly meetings. Dawn is going to get monthly reports as required during this construction period under the CBA from the team that are going to document the team's compliance with those high-level things I told you about. He's going to make sure everything's going right with the workforce. He's going to look around and make sure and, you know, sniff at it and make sure it looks good, monitor it, and report to you. We are going to, Stadium Authority staff, Caroline and I, work towards finding a new director because each of you was appointed by someone, from the governor to Senate Assembly leadership to Clark County commissioners to the Stadium Authority Board. Each of you came from one of those appointing bodies. Dr. Pollard came from the Stadium Authority, and the Stadium Authority's appointments include two of you and the director specifically. So one of the two Stadium Authority appointees has to be the director. And so we will work on that. I didn't mean director. I meant chair. Thank you, council. You could have said that out loud. The chair and staff board also does approve the director, but that's not what I was talking about. So we'll find that person, and our goal is to make that recommendation to the Stadium Authority Board at its August 21st meeting, I believe is when it is. And by the time this body meets again, we'll have somebody in the director role and all seven seats filled again. So Chair Pollard, that concludes my report on an overview of who we are, what we're doing, and where we're headed. And I'm available if you have any questions.
Thank you. I'd be happy to open up to the body for questions of Mr. Finger. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Ed, I was just curious. The Allegiant Stadium project had some similar targets for employment and minorities and whatever. How successful were they in hitting those?
Very successful. Very successful, mm-hmm. I mumbled. And, you know, Mr. Bedain, who was significant in that effort, is now in this seat for the A's, but the staff and the organization from the beginning of time, which I wasn't here for, but certainly in my period of administrative oversight, really do a good job and exceed the requirements of the community benefits agreement. They're obviously in the operational phase and are doing exceedingly well.
Okay. One other question. Yes. The requirement for 1% of ticket sales, does that include non-baseball events or not?
I know the answer to that. Can't find it right now. It excludes certain events. Yeah. There are events they will hold in the facility. I believe it's baseball events. Mark or Sandy, do you remember? It's baseball events, right? Yeah, it's baseball events.
Only.
It also excludes other things because not every baseball event is direct revenue. So, for example, excludes all-star games and certain other things. So, well done, Hugh. Mr. Cynic.
Other questions?
It's 1% of baseball sales.
All right. Thank you. So we thank you for that report, Mr. Finger. We've also talked some about the Community Benefits Agreement report, but I know we have an opportunity to hear from representatives to talk a little bit about that as well. I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. So, Chair Pollard, agenda item 2 is also staff report, doesn't require committee action. I described this reporting process in agenda item 1 today, and we'll get that first report today. Between here and the future, Don and the team will work on, you know, with this committee as to what the full robust versions of all this reporting might look like. But we've seen the report today, and it looks good. As I said, in the future, Mr. Burnett will be more significant in this agenda item and in the presentation of it, including representing to you his monitoring and what he's seen in that monitoring. But for today, I'm going to introduce Shanae Phillips of Mortenson, who is going to tell you how they are doing as it relates to the construction workforce efforts required under the CBA.
Wonderful. Thank you. Welcome, Shanae.
Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon. So I'm very pleased to be able to share some updates regarding the Mortenson McCarthy's team update or progress toward the community benefits update. I think I can just hit this. Perfect. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in, starting with the small local business requirement. So as you all know, there's a 15% small local business requirement for the job. Procurement started last spring, and we're looking to wrap that up later this summer. So the final proposal package is slated to be released at the end of August. And so with the buyout that's happened so far, we are right on target at 15% of the dollars awarded are committed to our SLBs. So translated to dollars, that's the $748 million of buyout to date, $114 million to those SLB firms, and $53 million to women and minority-owned firms. We also have 67 Nevada-based businesses from that. So this does represent participation at all tiers for the job. On the workforce side of things, there's a 51% targeted worker goal. So again, just as a reminder, targeted worker is defined as a woman, a person of color, a veteran, or a disabled worker. It does only apply to our on-site construction trade hours. So work kicked off earlier this spring. There's about 9 trade partners that we've had on site so far. And so to date, we have a 73% targeted worker hours. On the community engagement front, the Mortenson McCarthy team wants to ensure that local small businesses, women and minority-owned firms, the subcontractor and supplier vendor community remain aware of the status of the project, how they can engage with us, if they want to do business with us, anything like that. And so up here is just sort of a sampling of the different community and industry organizations that we communicate with and provide information to. And we've also held a variety of outreach events over the past year. So the first kind of big kickoff meeting for the construction project was held last September. We had just over 900 folks register to attend that. And then since then, we've held a number of pre-proposal meetings. So those are meetings that are held in conjunction with the release of a proposal package. And so that's sort of a more tailored, narrowed audience for our subcontractor and supplier community for the folks who perform those scopes of work that are getting ready to be released. And it's just a good opportunity for folks to come and they meet the project team. They can ask questions, better understand the timeline, the procurement process, the community benefits requirements that are attached to the job, all of that sort of stuff. And then we do, with the release of every proposal package, we also run advertisements in local print publications. So the three that we have out there, it's the Las Vegas Review Journal, the Construction Notebook, and El Tiempo. And we have also established a project-specific website that folks can access. So this has a variety of information that's specific to the construction job. Folks want to know about the procurement schedule or who's been awarded to date, who they can contact. There's a craft worker employment interest form up there, and then also a vendor interest form. So anyone who's looking to engage with us, want to know how to do business, who to get in touch with, that they want to provide proposals or bids or anything like that, they will submit their information on the website. And so as of last week, we had just over 600 firms who registered through that. Of those, 139 were identified as small local business meeting those requirements, and then 156 were identified as women or minority-owned firms. I think with that, that would conclude my update. I welcome any questions that anyone has at this time.
I'd love to invite you for questions. Please.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for the information and the update. I do have a quick question on the SLBs that are identified as the women and minority-owned businesses, the $53 million that's been, I guess, allocated in those contracts. Are you able to provide like a list or breakdown of what those businesses are,
yeah,
the disciplines and services that they've been contracted for?
Yeah, we can certainly provide
awesome.
That. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. For the definitions of local small business and then the other definitions, what standards are you using?
So there was a specific definition that was outlined in an SB1 in the community benefits agreement. So that's the definition that we are assessing everyone against.
Mr. Finger, looks like you have something you could add to that.
I was going to say, Director Castro, those are in Senate Bill 1, and I'll send them to you directly. But they are based on type of firm, dollar volumes of activity, certain other criteria that define what small means and what local means.
Thank you.
Sinead, thank you very much for the report. Very informative. Just one question I have for you. When you talk about Nevada-based and primarily maybe it relates to Director Castro's question about local, is this a differentiation between North Nevada and South Nevada in terms of how one conceives or defines? I know there's a technical definition mm-hmm. for it, but just out of curiosity to understand how that works.
Yeah, this was just an internal metric that we were tracking anyone based in Nevada that identified their business
period.
In Nevada.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Wonderful job.
Thank you.
So I believe at this time I'm also barring any other questions for Mr. Finger. No? All right. We are now, again, open for comments from the floor by the public. It's a public period, a comment period, where folks can raise questions to us. They are, or not questions, sorry, offer comments, and those are limited to 3 minutes in length. We have not had more people show up since we started, but I certainly want to give the opportunity for anyone to offer comments. Mr. Bedain.
Thank you, Dr. Pollard. For the record, Mark Bedain, it's nice to see everybody again. Appreciate your time. I want to thank Shanae for flying in from Minnesota for this. I think most of you know Sandy Dean, who's sitting in row two over there. If you haven't met him, I'm sure he'd be happy to stick around a little bit after and say hello and meet those of you that he hasn't had the opportunity to spend some time with. Sandy's the vice chair, longtime business and employee member of the Fisher family, and really the architect of the deal that brought us to today. So a lot to thank him for, and you can see the level of importance to the organization that we're here today, and how important this is to the organization. We launched our construction cam today, so if you actually want to see what's going on the job site, you can go to our website, and it's prominently placed, so you can see what's going on the site. I hope some of you were able to get to the groundbreaking a couple weeks ago. If I didn't get a chance to see you there, thank you for being there. I just wanted to address something. In future meetings, we'll have our own athletics report, and just in addition to the joint ventures report, just talking about what we're doing in the community. But I didn't want you to think we're waiting until things are finalized. We've been in the community for 3 years. We're actively engaged. We're at multiple events every week. In the next couple weeks, we'll be at a number of back-to-school events throughout the community. We're very supportive of Little League teams, both softball and baseball. And in fact, today or yesterday, we got a request from, I want to make sure I get this right, the Paseo Verde All-Stars, who won their regional tournament and are going to a tournament in Bend, Oregon. So we have allocated funds for any team in the area that qualifies to help with travel expenses and supporting every team in the community. So again, it's nice to see everyone. Dr. Pollard, our community's loss is Washington's gain. We're very sad to lose you, but it's been wonderful getting to know you, and you've made a lifelong friend here. So I hope you'll stay in touch, and we wish you the best in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Mr. Bedain. Thank you for the public comment. Any others? Well, with that, I will call for a motion to adjourn our meeting today.
It's actually not an action item.
It's not.
Madam Chair.
Oh my God!
It's at your discretion.
Oh, I just get to. You know, I've been too many regents meetings where we're all chomping to say adjourn. So the chair will adjourn the meeting. You are adjourned. Thank you, Madam Counselor. That's funny. Oh, it's the.